When I woke, the slice of sky peeking through the hotel curtains was the purple of twilight. The sheets were soaked and my head pounded. I looked at Sohrab's bed and my heart gave a sick lurch. It was empty. I called his name. Nothing. He was gone. I found the hotel manager reading a newspaper behind the Formica desktop.
Ah, the boys like to run around, he sighed.
But we're not from here. I'm afraid he might get lost.
Then you should have kept an eye on him, mister.
I stood at the counter trying not to scream.
Have you any idea where he might have wandered?
The mask, I said, remembering the way Sohrab had strained out of the car window when we'd driven past. I found him on a patch of grass 100 yards from the mosque. I sat beside him. We listened to the call to prayer, watched the buildings, hundreds of lights coming on. It sparkled like a diamond in the dark. It lit up the sky. Sohrab's face.
Father took me to Mazar-e-Sharif when I was little, he said. We went to the Blue Mosque. I remember there were so many pigeons outside, and they weren't afraid of people. They came right up to us, and I fed them with bits of naan.
That was fun. You must miss your parents very much, I said, wondering if he'd seen the Taliban drag them into the street. I hoped he hadn't.
Do you miss your parents?
I never met my mother, but I miss my father a lot.
Do you remember what he looked like?
I nodded. I remember what he smelled like, too.
I am starting to forget their faces. Is that bad?
I felt in the pocket of my coat, found the photo of Hassan and Sohrab.
Here.
He brought it to within an inch of his face. I thought he might cry, but he just traced his thumb over its surface. I thought of a line I'd read somewhere. There are lots of children in Afghanistan, but little childhood.
Can I ask you something, Amiraha?
Of course.
Will God put me in hell for what I did to that man?
Nay, of course not. I wanted to hold him, tell him that the world had been unkind to him. Not the other way round, but when I reached for him, he flinched. I pulled back, his face strained to stay composed.
Father used to say, it is wrong to hurt even bad people, because they don't know any better, and because bad people sometimes become good.
Not always, Sohrab. The man who hurt you tried to hurt me once when I was your age. But your father saved me. Your father was very brave, and he was always rescuing me from trouble. So one day the man hurt your father instead, in a very bad way. And I couldn't save your father the way he saved me. Sometimes bad people stay bad, and you have to stand up to them. What you did to that man is what I should have done all those years ago. Your father would be so proud of you.
I miss my father and mother, but sometimes I'm glad they're not here anymore. I don't want them to see me. I'm so dirty and full of sin. Those men, they did things.
You're not dirty, Sohrab. You're not full of sin. I reached gently and pulled him to me. I won't hurt you, I promise. He resisted a little, then slackened. Finally, he rested his head on my chest and sobbed. As his pain soaked through my shirt, I knew that a kinship had taken root between us. I'd been looking for the right moment to ask the question that had been buzzing around in my head. I decided it was now. With the bright lights of the house of God shining on us. Would you like to come and live in America with me and my wife? He didn't answer. He just sobbed in my shirt, and I let him. For a week, neither of us mentioned what I had asked. Then one day, sitting in the park, Sohrab pointed at the sky. I didn't know there were hawks in Islamabad, I said.
Neither me, he replied.
Do they have them where you live?
I guess so. Can't say I've seen too many, though.
I handed him a sandwich.
Your father and I were brothers, I said.
It just came out. I'd wanted to tell him for days. I didn't want to hide anything anymore. Half-brothers, really. We had the same father.
Sarab stopped chewing. Father never said he had a brother.
He didn't know. No one told either of us. I only just found out.
But why did people hide it from father and you? Because he was a Hazara.
I willed my eyes to stay on him.
Yes. Did your father love you and my father equally?
I pictured Baba in the hospital room, beaming as they removed the bandages from Hassan's lips. I think he loved us equally, but differently.
Was he ashamed of my father?
No. I think he was ashamed of himself.
On the way back to the hotel, Sarab plagued me with questions about San Francisco.
I smiled. Have you given any thought to what I asked you?
It scares me.
I know. But you'll learn English so fast.
That's not what I mean. What if you get tired of me? What if your wife doesn't like me?
I put my arm around him. I wouldn't ever get tired of you, Sarab. You're my nephew, remember? And Saraya's a very kind woman. She's going to love you.
I don't want to go to another orphanage.
I won't ever let that happen. I promise you that. When Sarab had gone to sleep, I phoned Saraya. She screamed when she heard my voice. She'd been sick with worry. I looked at my watch.
I have 57 minutes left on this stupid calling card, and I have so much to tell you.
Then I did what I hadn't done in 15 years of marriage. I told my wife everything. By the time I'd finished, she was weeping. But one thing she made clear was that she loved me, and she wanted me to bring Sarab home. At the American Embassy, I explained that I had gone into Afghanistan to bring back my half-brother's son. I had found the boy in squalid conditions in an orphanage, and I had brought him to Pakistan.
You're the boy's half-uncle?
The official asked.
Yes. Know anyone who can attest to that?
Yes, but I don't know where he is. We were in trouble, and I knew it.
Even if we assume what you've told me is true, the boy isn't legally an orphan.
His parents were executed in the street, I said.
You have death certificates?
I was incredulous.
This is Afghanistan we're talking about. Most people don't even have birth certificates.
His eyes didn't so much as blink.
If you want to help, send money to a reputable relief organization. Volunteer at a refugee camp. But at this point in time, we strongly discourage U.S. citizens from attempting to adopt Afghan children.
I'm not giving up, I said.
Then you need a good immigration lawyer.
Omar Faisal had dimpled cheeks and an affable smile. I told him everything.
Well, Amir, you got a tough battle ahead of you.
One I can win?
At the risk of sounding like an embassy official, it's not likely. Even if it's clear that the child has no surviving parents, the INS think it's good adoption practice to place him with someone in his own country. And as far as Afghanistan goes, Sharia law doesn't recognize adoption. The only option I can see, and it's a long shot, is to relinquish him to an orphanage here. Then file something called an orphan petition.
I promised Sarab I wouldn't send him back to an orphanage.
It may be your only shot.
Back at the hotel, I sat beside Sarab.
You'd promise me. You'd never put me in one of those places, Amiraha.
His voice was breaking, tears pooling in his eyes.
This is different. It would be here in Islamabad. And I'd visit you all the time until we can get you out and take you to America.
They'll hurt me.
No one's gonna hurt you ever again.
I wipe the tears streaking down his cheeks, wrap my arms around his shaky little body. It'll be all right. You'll see.
Please. Promise, won't you, Amir? Please, promise.
How could I promise? I held him against me and rocked back and forth until his breathing slowed and he fell asleep. I carried him to his bed, then lay on my own, looking out at the purple sky. The phone jolted me from sleep.
Call from America.
The bathroom door was open. Sohrab was taking his nightly bath. A couple of clicks, and then Soraya. I told her about my disastrous day.
Well, you can forget about that. I have spoken to a guy who has contacts in the INS. Apparently, if we get Sohrab into the country, it is almost certain we can get him a humanitarian visa.
I knocked on the bathroom door. Sohrab! Great news! We don't have to put you in an orphanage. Sohrab! I pushed the door open. Suddenly I was on my knees, screaming until I thought my chest would explode. They said I was still screaming when the ambulance arrived. I see them wheel him through a set of double doors. Two men wearing surgical caps huddle over the trolley. A pair of small bloody feet poke out from under the sheet. I close my eyes and my nostrils fill with the smell of the corridor. I open them again, and I know what I have to do. I grab a sheet from a pile of folded linen. I throw my makeshift prayer rug on the floor and get on my knees. I haven't prayed for over 15 years. I've long forgotten the words, but it doesn't matter. I'll utter those few words I still remember. I see now that Baba was wrong. There is a God. I see him here. In the eyes of the people in this corridor of desperation. This is where those who have lost God will find him. Not in the white mosque with its bright diamond lights and towering minarets. There is a God. There has to be. I will pray that he forgives that I have neglected him all these years. Forgive that I have betrayed, lied, and sinned only to turn to him now in my hour of need. I pray that he is as merciful, benevolent, and gracious as his book says he is. I hear a whimpering, and I realize it's mine. My lips are salty with the tears trickling down my face. I pray that my sins haven't caught up with me the way I had always feared they would. Someone's tapping me on the shoulder. There's a man kneeling beside me wearing a cap and a surgical mask. I don't think I can bear to hear what he's come to tell me. Twice they had to revive him. He'd cut himself so deep, they would have lost him if his heart hadn't been young and strong. He is alive.